AFK discussion starts now.
Life's beyond the edge of reason. Every answer spots a deeper question. If you could see the world the way I see it, would you dare to step into the tension? What hides beyond the veil we're taught to trust?
Hey guys, welcome back to AFK Discussions, your home for all things weird, strange, paranormal, whatever you're into, we talk about it. So guys, tonight is going to be really good. Before we get into it, let me say about blah, blah. Before we get into this, let me give you a little shout out to my sponsor, FatTac.com. FatTac, check it out for all your tactical needs. Go check them out. So I've been teasing little things about an announcement and stuff. So Chris, my boy Chris here. So last time we did the episode, and then after the episode was over, we started talking about G.I. Joe. And we're like, did we just become best friends? So guys, I invited Chris to be a co-host on the show from now on. So welcome, Chris. Chris, tell everyone a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thanks so much, dude. I'm honored that you would want to have me on here. It's great talking about this stuff and just hanging out. I'm from Denver, Colorado. Moved to Tennessee almost 7 years ago. Love it. Used to be in bands and stuff like that. Tour a little bit. Just that cool kind of punk rock metal life kind of thing. And something about me. Well, I kind of consider myself to be sort of like a Christian contrarian, in that the weird things in the Bible have always stuck out to me, and I was never quite satisfied just with the status quo kind of easy answer that people would give for some of the really weird, hard stuff in the Bible. So that has kind of launched me onto this lifelong quest of searching the weird things out. I think it was Dr. Michael Heiser that said, if it's in the Bible, if it's weird, then it's important. Yeah. That kind of always stuck with me. So that's what I love doing, is pulling out the weird stuff, looking at it, and kind of dissecting it and trying to dig for truth.
Yeah, for sure. So one thing, I'm kind of the same way, just, you know, whenever, you know, growing up in the church and, you know, you're reading these passages and, you know, memorizing scriptures and stuff like that, and you come across, you know, a scripture like, you know, Jesus walked across the water and the disciples were afraid. And they're like, it's a spirit. It's a ghost. I'm like, are ghosts real? I mean, they seem to think that there's ghosts.
Yeah.
You know, and Jesus never got on the boat and was like, guys, there's no such thing as ghosts. Calm down. It's just me, you know?
Yeah.
So that's always been one of the things.
That, though, if it wasn't real.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Which I don't think that ghosts are like your dead Aunt Martha that's coming back to visit you. You know, I think ghosts are more like, you know, demons. And I think the translation there probably wasn't ghost. It was more likely just spirit.
Yes.
Which are, you know, talked about all through the Bible. Probably, you know, evil spirits. There's like that area of the world is so rich with like just weirdness.
Yes.
I mean, if you take out a Christianity, if you look into the other religions in that area, I mean, that you have like jinns and you have all these other like weird, like supernatural creatures that are nefarious and try to, you know, just, I mean, demons, obviously. But yeah, so I mean, all the religions, like most religions started from that area, unless you're talking like the Eastern religions. I mean, that's kind of like the three big world religions started in the same place.
That's right.
So, yep. You know.
Exactly. Yeah.
It gets weird. I don't know if that made sense. I was kind of rambling.
No, it totally makes sense. I mean, that's one of the weird passages of the Bible. So it makes sense that would stick out to you.
But also, what is it? The witches in the Bible. There's like sorcerers. Yes. Yeah. What is the Witch of Endor?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Saul went to Endor and to supposedly have her conjure up the spirit of Elijah.
Yeah, it's all, I mean, there's so much in there. You know, whenever I think about, you know, the Exodus, mm-hmm. and the, you know, the magicians, the sorcerers for the Pharaoh, you know, and changing their staffs to snakes and, you know, yeah. all that. It's just, it's so, so crazy to think about. I mean, is magic real? I think magic's real.
Yeah.
You know,
why would God forbid witchcraft if you couldn't actually tap into something else that we weren't supposed to be, you know?
Oh yeah, definitely. 100%.
Yeah. My kids just watched the Prince of Egypt.
Mm.
And so that's laid out, that whole scene, playing with the big boys now.
Yeah.
Like the magicians are doing their sorcery and stuff. But
yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, it is.
Sorry, you guys were seeing there.
So another thing in the Bible that's really cool, I cannot remember off the top of my head where it's at, where, you know, what chapters it is in or anything, but the story where there's an idol and they're trying to call down fire on the idol. And then,
oh, Elijah and the prophets of Baal.
Yeah, Elijah goes and is like, dump a bunch of water on it. You know, I'll show you what's up.
Yeah, literally soak it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But anyways, man, without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to you. I'm letting him take the lead on the show, and let's get into it.
Sweet. Thanks so much, man. I'm excited to talk about this. We're talking about the unholy ascension of Nimrod. So for those that you do, for those of you that don't know, Nimrod is spoken about very briefly in Genesis, but he was notorious enough that he got a mention in there, which, I mean, a lot of things in Genesis, like they give you some exact accounts of stories and things like that, but then a lot of it is zoomed out and they're like, and this happened here and this happened there, and kind of moving through a lot of time that's not elaborated on. But he was so notorious that he got a section in there, almost like a dishonorable mention, if you will. And a lot of scholars and biblical theologians will kind of refer to him as one of the first, if not the first, archetypical Antichrist figure in the Bible. So if you recall what Jesus said about there will be many Antichrists, because Antichrist is a spirit, right? That's been at work in this world for eons, really. Yeah. So Nimrod was really that first kind of political Antichrist figure to rise up and, rally the people, both through enslavement, but also I think through inspiring them in an unholy way to build the Tower of Babel. And there's a lot that is entailed with that. We'll get into that a little bit. But really, starting off, I mean, Nimrod was the grandson of Ham, one of Noah's sons. And so Noah was his great-grandfather. I think they have that right. If I don't, someone will correct me. And I am open to that correction, but I'm pretty sure he was Noah's great grandson. And the Bible talks about him being a mighty hunter before the Lord. And so, you know, if you kind of take that at face value, it's like, oh, he was a hunter. He's like hunting animals and things. But if you go back to the original language, there is a lot there to extrapolate. Basically, he hunted everything. He hunted animals. He hunted people. It has that connotation to where the phrase before the Lord kind of meant like, in the eyes of God, at the sight of God, like he was not fearing God. He was not afraid that God was watching his deeds, whether they were good or evil. Like he was just doing it. He almost like a fist to the sky, like I'm going to do whatever. And so there's a lot of really interesting things that go along with that. I think he was a bit of a cheater with how he hunted, because legend has it that he ended up, receiving the skins coverings that God had made for Adam and Eve after they had sinned and found themselves naked, uncovered from the glory of God. He killed a lamb and made for them animal coverings, right? And so that in and of itself is very powerful. It's a, you know, an allusion to Jesus being killed for our sins. But legend has it that those skins were imbued with some sort of supernatural power from God that would allow Adam and Eve to exercise dominion over the beasts of the field easier. So it is said that if you had those, that everything was subject to you as far as the animal kingdom and things like that. You wouldn't have had to hunt that hard or chase down animals. They would willingly submit to you and you could just take them out. So after the flood, Cush stole those, which was Nimrod's father. And that's where the legend comes, that Cush passed those garments, those sacred magical garments, down to Nimrod. And so he put those on. And
so I had a thought. So I'm assuming that these garments were on the ark also.
Yes, right? They would have been brought. Yeah. Been some of those artifacts that made it through the flood. Yeah. Sorry.
No, I
pull up my notes here.
Because like you, I don't, like, it's been a while since I read any of that. So I don't remember. Is there a refresher? Or is it in the Bible you're talking about beforehand?
Some of that
is kind of allude that, or Enoch, or in one of those extra biblical books, or
yeah, these are in some of the apocryphal books, Enoch, okay, and then Jasher and Jubilees and those kinds of things.
Okay,
so this would have been the cloaks. Obviously, would have been before the flood, and Adam would have had those. It would have been something that he used to rule, and it would have been in that family. They would have kind of been passed down. And somehow they survived the flood, and then they had been stolen from Noah by his son Ham, right? Yeah. And then Ham would have had them and given them to his son Cush. And so then that's how Nimrod would have gotten them. And so the animals basically, like, they would have just submit to him when he goes out to the woods. They would not be afraid of him. They wouldn't run away in fear or anything like that.
Yeah.
Had some sort of almost like a spell type calming effect or something on animals. So that was part of I think what had been tied into God imbuing some sort of power into those to allow them to assert dominion over nature a little bit easier. And so with that being said, like, he hunted animals, he became well known for that. But then he started to kill people as well and became a mighty warrior. Mm. And would go out and kind of conquer peoples and tribes and things like that, and bring them in, started building an empire, if you will, and getting followers and things like that. And so that's kind of where the biblical, as far as just a standard biblical account, kind of goes quiet on that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about the mighty hunter before the Lord and how he kind of organized the building of the Tower of Babel and the Plain of Shinar. Which, if you've looked at a biblical archaeology or you know, that area, Shinar was like a plain with like a low basin.
Mm-hmm.
It never really was about height. Like, I think a lot of times the ancients are painted as kind of stupid, in that it's like, oh, they thought they could build a tower up to God. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, it was big and it was supposed to be a spectacle to all the world, but it was a ziggurat, basically. Mm-hmm. And there was a temple up there. And what they were doing through some sort of like ancient technology coupled with, you know, pagan rituals, was they were attempting to open portals to heaven, right?
Yeah. And that's what I've heard about it. Yeah.
The crazy thing about that is, like, they would have been successful because God, it says that God looked down and saw what they were doing, saw that they were united as one people, as one human race. And he's like, there's literally nothing that's going to be, you know, not doable for them. So we got to go down and take care of this. So just that the language is there, if you go back to the original, it talks about that kind of thing. So there was some sort of portal involved that they were going to go through. And then if you go into some of the apocryphal accounts, it actually talks about them opening a portal and Nimrod boasting and being blasphemous against God, saying that, you know, I'm going to go in there and kill God if he doesn't, you know, behave, if he doesn't send us rain on our crops and this kind of thing. He had his archers fire arrows into the portal. It's like, oh, we're firing a warning in there. And it says God had the arrows returned back out of the portal covered in blood to deceive them, like they had hit something, you know, kind of like God was messing with them, like, oh no, yeah, you hurt us with your arrows. Like, and then they unleash, you know, the Babel curse, where everybody's language is cursed and they're all dispersed and things like that. But anyways, back to Nimrod. So scripture talks about him, that he was a mighty hunter before the Lord, right? And then it also says that he became Gibberim. And so Gibberim meant like a mighty one. And that term mighty one was used of giants. So it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
He became a mighty one. He became a giant. How does one become a mighty one, a giant? Because he wasn't born that way, right? We can track his lineage from Cush and Ham and back up to Noah. So my brain wouldn't let that go of like, how does one become a giant? Like, it's like, okay, I know he had the special garments from God that gave him some sort of power, some sort of advantage, right, over animals and things. Did it imbue him with some sort of physical strength as well? That's one speculation that people have talked about, is that by putting on those garments, that's how he became mighty. And so, did I lose you there for a second? Hello? You back? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now.
Oh, sorry about that.
No worries.
Let's see, where were we? We were talking about, oh.
Powers from turning into a gibberine. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have some people that kind of, they sort of speculatively answer that question in that, oh, well, maybe when he put on those magical cloaks, those garments that God had given Adam and Eve, maybe that imbued him with actual physical strength as well, kind of like Samson or something. And I mean, that could be it. Absolutely, that could be it. I think that's probably part of it. But it's some of the language there, if you go back, it talks about almost like a wickedness, a profane ritualistic thing that has a sexual connotation. So there could have been some sort of wicked ritual going on that had a demonic element to it, coupled with the garments that they, you know, had stolen that had leftover power in them. And then there's another piece that, and this is pure speculation on my point, on my end, I don't have anything to back this up, but a couple of years ago, I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about Nephilim and giants and things like that. And somebody was talking about how some experiments were done that were horrible in modern times, I think over in Russia or something like that, where scientists took, it was either some sort of dog or a wolf strain, and that they would feed it the endocrine glands of other dogs and other wolves, mm-hmm. like the pineal gland from your forehead. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, your crin, and it has all of those growth hormones and that kind of stuff in it. And so they would do that. And then like within a ridiculously short period of time, the dog grew to like massive, massive size and strength, like almost double what it had been. And it was just absolutely crazy. And of course, that was like really hidden and squashed down because they didn't want people finding out all that stuff. But for some reason, that triggered something, just some sort of connection in my brain with Nimrod. I was like, wait a minute. So if he was hunting animals and then he became a killer and hunted down people, what if he was also hunting down giants? Because then we know that there was giant tribes and things like that were plaguing the people. And so I had this thought of, well, what if he was endearing himself to the larger population of humanity, kind of coming off as he was this some sort of savior figure, saving them from the enslavement of the giants? And so maybe he would kill some of them and, you know, sorry for the disgustingness of it, but like eat their, you know, endocrine glands or whatever. And somehow between that and the profane demonic rituals, he like became this like other than human kind of giant hybrid gibberine mighty man type thing.
Yeah, definitely.
That's kind of where we go from that. But yeah, it's very interesting in that he was able to unite all the peoples like that. And they forgot the ways of God. They forgot the teachings that Seth would have passed down, you know, of following God's ways and that kind of thing. And so, yeah, sorry, I lost my place here. Let's see.
Real quick while you're going in to find your place. So Thomas from Free the Rabbits, he has this theory that he has put together. I know he's read a bunch of stuff. I mean, that guy has read more than anybody, but he has this theory about the weapons of Goliath. And how whenever David picks up the weapons of Goliath, they actually change size to fit David. They are like these magical weapons. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's something to that because the Bible talks about sort of angelic technology that was passed down, an angelic thing. So if, you know, like God had made magical cloaks for Adam and Eve to cover them and to give them dominion over the animals, who's to say that the fallen ones didn't do that for their own offspring as well, make some things like that, like especially if they wanted their giant offspring to rule and subdue mankind, right? Yeah, I think there's something to that, definitely. So
yeah,
no doubt Nimrod would have had all those kinds of things because of all of the pagan and demonic influences that he worshipped and allowed in his life.
Yeah.
As far as his demise goes, have you ever heard about his death?
No, I haven't at all. No.
Very, very interesting. So this is not in the standard biblical canon, but you can read about it in the apocryphal books, right? And basically Esau is credited with killing Nimrod. So really? Remember Jacob and Esau?
Yeah.
So a lot of times we forget that, like, a lot of these biblical characters, they lived for so long and overlapped each other. So they lived almost to 1,000 years, right? So that covers a long time. So Esau would have been young, like a young man, after Nimrod was already established, you know? So I think it's in Jasher. It might be in Jubilees. It's one of those J apocryphal books. People want to go look it up. But basically, the story goes that Esau was out hunting. And we know that he had become a mighty hunter and good at that kind of thing.
And Esau was also, wasn't he covered in hair?
He was hairy. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff. He was just a real manly man, like outdoors type dude. And so legend has it that he was out hunting, and that also Nimrod was out hunting that day. And it says that Nimrod had two mighty men with him. So two giants were with him as bodyguards. And it said that Esau basically came upon their party, hunting party, and caught them unawares. And so they didn't know he was there. And it says he stalked them. And while he was still hiding and stalking, it says that he drew a bow and shot an arrow into Nimrod's left eye.
Mm.
And while Nimrod was stunned, got hit in the eye with an arrow, it said that Esau ran up and killed the two giants and then took on Nimrod in hand-to-hand combat and cut his head off.
Dang.
And so if you correlate that, then like, it's like, okay, if you're going to fight three Gibborim, three giants, right, and win, you obviously got to be a pretty tough guy, you know?
Oh, so yeah.
Somehow God was with him, even though by that time he probably wasn't following God's ways and things like that. But that also gives a lot more context to the biblical story of when he sold his birthright away to Jacob. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It says he came in from the field hunting and was exhausted and said, "Give me some of that stew." And Jacob's like, "No, sell me your birthright." Right. And he's like, "What good is it to me if I'm dead? Like, sure, you can have it." And then he gave him stew. And so we just thought, like, oh, you know, he's just this kind of brash type guy, manly dude, doesn't care about anything that's of worth. That's how it was portrayed growing up, because I wasn't taught to read the apocryphal books. We're like, oh, you got to stay away from that stuff, you know? And I mean, you do need to use discernment and things like that. But I think there's a lot of good in some of those things that give us extra context. So think about it that way. If he'd just come from that battle with Nimrod and two giants and he killed all three of them, you got to know that some alarm was set off or something. And so they were probably out looking for him, or at least, you know, when the king didn't show back up, they went out and I'm sure they were tracking Esau somehow, which is why he was just exhausted from trying to run away. So that being said, the legend goes that after he killed Nimrod, that he took those garments, those magical cloaks, the skin coverings, and so had taken those and then had despised his birthright from the Lord. So it was almost as if he was completely rejecting who he was. Because at that point he had killed wicked Nimrod. I mean, he could have fulfilled his godly destiny and led all humanity back to God, right? But instead it says he took that and fled, and he went off to a pagan country and married two pagan women, it says. And it says God was very angry with him for that. So I think there was just a lot more to him despising his birthright than, you know, what we've always just been taught with the traditional story.
Yeah, definitely.
But there's a whole lot there. I mean, that whole thing of Nimrod getting his eye shot out, left eye. I mean, that's the whole one eye symbolism that you see all throughout Hollywood, all throughout the world now. It symbolizes, you know, like the devil, the Illuminati, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
And so, also, I mean, there's a lot of one-eyed gods also, you know, like if you think of Odin.
That symbolism goes all throughout those ruling gods like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Odin. That's, what was the Greek one that had the eye put out?
I don't know. I'm not great with Greek mythology, or was it Zeus? I don't know. I got a computer right in front of me.
we'll have to do a deeper dive on that sometime on the pantheon of gods, little g's.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing that came up was Cyclops, but no. Of course,
okay,
Cyclops
well,
is
while we're on
a
subject of giants and Cyclops and things like that. We inevitably, we always go back to like movies and pop culture and stuff, but
yeah.
Two of my favorite movies in modern times are Clash of the Titans and War of the Titans. Mm-hmm. You seen those?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I like the originals.
The originals are
I like
awesome.
The original Clash of the Titans. Gosh.
My dad let me watch it when I was a little kid, and they had a lasting impact on me.
Definitely. Gosh. The one thing I wish, I think they did a little bit bring it into the new one. It's been a long time since I saw it. The little owl, the mechanical owl.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. In the second one, is it, it's like War of the Titans is the second new one?
Mm-hmm, I think so.
New-ish one. I mean, it's not new now, but yeah, well, I think when they go to Hephaestus, when they're trying to get him to give him the secrets of the labyrinth, somebody's digging through like a chest of weapons and gadgets and stuff in there. And they pull up that little clockwork owl from the original and toss it away.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Gosh, but without that film, modern filmmaking wouldn't exist, I think. Because, I mean, what was his name? Harryhausen. Harryhausen, yeah. His work on all the practical effects and stuff, it just, I mean,
oh,
that's
man,
what
all
started
them,
it all. Yeah.
War of the Titans, Clash of the Titans. Is it Sinbad's Voyages or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are great. I love those.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, man. So I was thinking, isn't there some correlation between Gilgamesh and this story?
Yeah, there's some conflicting opinions within scholars that some of them will equate Nimrod and Gilgamesh as the same person.
Yeah.
And then others claim to show evidence that they are not the same people.
So there's a lot of like the stonework and stuff and the carvings, they look very similar.
I think
facial features and beards and stuff.
Yes. Yes. Very, very similar. I think it's probably the same guy. I think that when you look at, so from our perspective, looking like from the Bible, that's a monotheistic view of history and things. And it's kind of a view of like in light of God, like one God, Yahweh. But other historical accounts would be kind of polytheistic through the pagan lens of the pantheon of little g gods. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times those are conflated and just like puffed up to make it a little grander than what they were sometimes. So I think that's where the differences lie. But I think it's probably talking about the same guy.
I think so too. So
same.
Like the biblical account of is like you're saying is the story from a biblical worldview. And then you have like, because the Epic of Gilgamesh is like one of the oldest recorded stories.
Yes.
I think. So, I mean, it's probably just another account of
exactly
and whenever the languages was changed at Babel. So maybe his name became Gilgamesh in someone else's language, you know?
Yes, exactly. I think that's most makes like sense. What happened.
Yeah.
So it's pretty interesting.
And then also these portals, I'm going somewhere now. I'm starting to cook.
That's cool.
So these portals, what if that, you know, the whole, you know, Anunnaki thing with Gilgamesh and the, you know, the ancient aliens theory. What if those were these portals that he was opening at the Tower of Babel? He was bringing through these entities these fallen entities into the realm, and that was their gods, the Anunnaki, you know, the Enkidu and all that stuff.
Well, that very well, absolutely very well could be, because if I remember vaguely, in the Epic of Gilgamesh, him and his buddy Enkidu went on a fantastic journey where they went and killed some like Cyclops giant guardian of some forest, cedar forest or something. And then didn't they find some sort of writings, like, was it the Emerald Tablets, or am I thinking of something else?
Emerald Tablets sound familiar, but that could be something else also.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since.
So I kind of blew through in a rocky way all the story of Nimrod and things, but going kind of back to that, like before he became a Gibberine, before he became a giant, I think he came into possession of some ancient sort of knowledge. And there's a couple different texts that talk about that. But I think that's how he found out how to do these profane rituals and things like that. And it's probably how he learned kind of that sorcery of how to open portals. And, you know, some beings came through and were helping him. And he just kind of embraced the dark side, so to speak, I think.
Yeah, which is, it's... That throughout biblical history, that kind of thing happens a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people kind of overlook that, especially in the church. They kind of overlook what it's talking about. I know we kind of briefly in text mentioned something about the lesser keys of Solomon, which is kind of the same along the same lines, where he's getting into this unholy magic.
And, yeah.
Like using it to control demons for his, mm-hmm.
Yeah. With Solomon, there's some interesting things within pagan writings about that, about how he supposedly used them to build the temple of God. I don't buy into all of that, because some of that is some dark stuff. But
so, like, you mean like the Temple Mountain stuff that. What he
there's some crazy things in there that kind of ascribe that to that, and like Masons and things will hold Solomon in very high regard. You have the term Solomonic magic, kind of this like light wielding thing. It's very new age. They trace back to that, what they would call Solomonic magic, through talismans and symbols and runes, even that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And so, yeah, it's very interesting. You got to be careful. I don't recommend reading either of the keys.
Yeah. No.
The lesser greater keys. But, you know, if you're covered in prayer and in the Holy Spirit, then go for it. But, yeah, it's very interesting. If you just do a tertiary look at it, like on a Google search or something like that, it's interesting. If you look at it almost looks like a clock face. Mm-hmm. And they will tell you on some of the greater principalities and things. It'll show you kind of on the clock face where the star is for that. And then you correspond and look at the list of names, and it'll give you the names of those principalities on that. And so just for fun one day, I was like, wait a minute, the symbol on Tennessee of, you know, the state of Tennessee has three stars. What are the odds of that? And it's mm-hmm. within a circle, right? So I looked that up on the clock face of the Keys of Solomon, and it gave some very interesting names.
Mm.
At least two of those were tied in with ancient Egypt, which, I mean, one of our large cities is Memphis.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of pagan things that go on there. I mean, they have their own pyramid there, and mm-hmm. there's kinds of pagan practices and just worship and things that go on in that city, not to mention the amount of murders and things that happen there all the time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And also there is, so I was watching a documentary on YouTube. And it was about 3-6 Mafia. I don't know if you're and so I can't remember his name. One of the main singers was like, yeah, you know, I was doing this stuff for the devil, and he was like coming out and saying it, you know.
Yeah, he's serious too. Like,
yeah. I mean, all that took place in Memphis, it's all tied in. And Tennessee is such a weird place, right? Because you have the pyramid in Memphis, and then in Nashville you have the Parthenon.
Yep.
Set up there. And then here, I don't know if you know this or not, but apparently there's been Egyptian relics found in the town of Norris when they built the dam.
Bro, I was just going to say, you know, there's supposedly a pyramid under Norris Lake.
Yeah, and also there's supposedly a pyramid in the Great Smoky Mountains also.
Yeah, I believe that, man. There's some weird stuff up here.
Yeah, man. And, you know, with all the folklore and, gosh, it's just crazy. Like, you know, you have, like, the Land Between the Lakes, which is another very weird place that GVA flooded for some reason, right?
Whole show on that.
Yeah, which, you know, he has the dog man out there. And then, I mean, even this area, I mean, there's so many like creatures and little people, which, you know, are, you know, fey folk essentially.
Yeah.
Which, I think all that is, I mean, I think it's all real. I mean,
100%.
They're all just these entities that, you know, like, I don't know, because they found... Wasn't it in England or somewhere they found like bones of like small people?
Oh, like, yeah.
Tiny people? Yeah.
Yeah. There's a reference to that in the Bible too. It talks about.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And it talks about them and had like them lined up on their walls for war kind of thing. And so that kind of goes in with some of these ancient like carvings and things we've seen and like some of the remains of like small little armor and weapons and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild. And I think there's even, I don't remember whose show it was on, I was listening to, but they were talking about there's some Native American tribe that talks about little people like that, that they're like
Cherokee. That's here. Yeah.
That them.
Cherokee,
yeah.
Little people. Yeah.
That's them. They're like, they have arrows and spears and they will kill you. Like,
yeah.
Wild. Growing up in South Africa, they have a legend there of little people called the Tokoloshes. You ever heard of that?
I have not, no.
Yeah, so it's like little people, kind of maybe an African version of like leprechauns or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you would have to leave them food offerings and things so they would leave you alone.
I mean, that's just like fey folk. I mean, you know, the tricksters that you have to leave them food or, you know, they'll steal your belongings and all this.
Yeah. Stuff. Yeah, with the Tokoloshes as well, like if you didn't do the food offering right, then they would get mad at you as a precaution of them like carrying you, like kidnapping you and your kids at night. You had to mount your bed higher on a brick made from a certain type of clay from a certain area there down in South Africa. This like red, like real red clay. So you had to use like a certain type of red bricks to prop up your bed off the floor. And that was supposedly some sort of protection against these things if you inadvertently got them upset at you for not doing the right sacrifice.
Dang. So let me, okay. We're about to get into something real.
Let's go.
Okay. So you're talking about Africa. You're talking about little people. And so I haven't talked about this in a while. And I don't think you know this because this happened before I met you. So my mother-in-law went to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And she brought my son back a whistle, right? But we didn't know she brought it to him. So one day, my wife and I, some weird stuff had been going on in the house, right? Tiffany was saying that the bed felt like it was vibrating. So I snore at night, right? So I always let her get to sleep before I come to bed just to be, so I don't keep her up at night.
Yeah.
Right? So she was trying to go to sleep and she said the bed was vibrating. And it felt like little legs walking on the bed, right?
Oh, my gosh.
And this went on for about a week. And then I was cleaning the room or something. I was like, what's this? And I saw this, like, wooden whistle with all these carvings on it. And we were like, what is this? So we started looking it up. And we found that it was an African voodoo whistle. So because of the certain carvings that were on it, right?
Yeah.
And we asked my mother-in-law about it. And she's like, yeah, I got that at one of the little markets and brought it back to Rory.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, she didn't know.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. So it was very weird, to say the least. So anyways, long story short, I took the whistle and I buried it in an undisclosed location. And we haven't had anything since. So
nice. That's
but,
good.
Yeah, it was very weird.
You didn't blow it, did you?
No, no. I think Tony said you should. He's like, you should blow it. I was like, no. Yeah.
They would say that.
Gosh, I got a picture of it somewhere still, but I was going to sketch out what the little symbol looked like.
Oh yeah.
Maybe crazy. Maybe I shouldn't sketch that out. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe not. Well, dude, that whole conversation of fae folk and fairy and things like that, like portals. I mean, you've got that all over the world. Like,
oh yeah, definitely. I mean, throughout all history. I mean,
Ireland, Scotland,
everywhere has it.
Fairy dolmens and you know, and it's crazy. You ever heard of Gary Wayne?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. So in his book, his first book, he talks about the similarities between a fairy kidnapping and a gray alien abduction story.
Really?
And it's like, it's so interesting and also terrifying because the accounts of people that were quote unquote abducted by fairies or little people are almost identical to the stories of people that claim to be abducted by gray aliens.
You know, I think I have heard something similar to that.
Yeah.
I can't remember where I heard it, though. I was trying to find a pen so I could draw that stupid symbol, but I can't find a pen.
But yeah, I mean, that would make sense. Like if it's demonic creatures, like some sort of supernatural creature that aren't supposed to be here.
Yeah.
But like definitely. They were given some sort of legal right or dominion right to come through the veil. I mean, God, we know that God does everything decently and in order, right? And he has set up. Mankind was supposed to have dominion over the earth, and they forfeited that and gave that up to Satan when Adam and Eve sinned. So it's like, I think there's a lot to giving legality for something in that other realm to be able to cross over and mess with us here.
Yeah.
Whether we do it like knowingly or unknowingly, you know? So
this is one of the symbols, but I'm trying to draw from memory. It was something similar. You can't even see it. Crap. Kind of weird. Something similar like that. Looks almost like a tree with like little balls on the end of it.
Bro, there's a little person peeking out from behind your chair.
I'd freak out if there was.
It looks like a little Christmas ornament.
I know it does, but it's not, I mean, like I said, I'm trying to draw it from memory. It may not be exactly what it is.
Crazy.
But yeah, it was very weird. And I mean, we were sitting in our living room watching a movie when all this was going on, and we heard footsteps coming up our stairs. Like,
no way.
Like, yeah.
Bro.
Like adult footsteps, not just.
Call the Ghostbusters, son.
I know. Well, I mean, I don't have to now because I got rid of the whistle and it
there
all
you
went
go.
Away.
Crazy.
I think I posted on Instagram, so I will be able to find it. So, guys, if you go to my old Instagram page, which is the new image of the invisible, used to be AFK Discussions before I switched, I have a picture of it over there, I think. I'm pretty sure. I'm looking right now. Watch me not be able to find it. Here it is. Yeah. I found it. It's actually a video. I'm talking about it on the video.
Cool.
I don't have a still picture. I just have the video of it.
Video of the.
Yeah, it's like burnt. It's like wood burnt. Yeah, so it's way more. Look, there's one side of it. It's got like a. It's
crazy.
So that's what it looks like. Here, I can just send you the link. That would be easier. But it's very weird. Being from Africa, not like Africa is a small country.
Yeah.
Or a small continent.
We had to be so careful over there because there was all kinds of witchcraft.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's like it's a thing, you know, that they would trick people to, you know, buy this and take it back to your kid.
Here,
you know?
Take it home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Tony had they talked about that. I think it was with Pastor Troy Brewer. Remember that?
Yeah.
Where it's like witch doctors would try to give you something or get you to buy a trinket. Or,
oh, yeah. That's
sort of
guarantee you that's what happened, man.
Sort of link to you. Yeah. Crazy.
Okay. I had to send it to myself and I'm going to send it to you.
Sweet.
Okay. So yeah, check that video out. Just sent.
There we go. Oh gosh. Yeah, that's creepy looking.
Yeah, dude. So it wasn't exactly what I drew, but it's very similar.
Yeah, that's close.
Yeah.
You may have a bright future in artistry. Bro, that's creepy. Yeah, so what you drew, like, on the whistle itself, like, it kind of looks like a tree, but it almost looks like black smoke coming up out of the ground, almost, sinister-like.
Because it's not really a tree. And then the other side is, like,
It's got that weird little X symbol thing.
Yeah, I can't remember what the name of that symbol is. You see it on like medical, like
yeah, some sort of snake thing.
The medical symbol, the centerpiece. What is it? Medical symbol. What is it called? Yeah, that thing. What is that called? I don't know what it's called, but it resembles that, which is I think a pagan symbol also, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it is. It's funny because it's like you see all these symbols and stuff like in Africa or in the middle, like the Far East Asian yeah. countries. But then you look at them, they're not that far off from some of the Nordic runes you see or some of the Greek
symbols.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
And you realize, wait a minute, all this stuff is connected.
So I wonder if I can throw this up. Let's see. I'm going to try to throw this up. I've never, like I said, this is all new, right? Trying to do live again, or not live, trying to do YouTube again. So I will try to throw this up. So guys, if you're listening on audio and you want to see this, go over to YouTube. So I'm going to try to throw this up and then I'll try to throw the Instagram video up because that would be cool to show. Let's see. Okay, bear with me, guys. I'm trying here. Okay, so drop that. Can I drop that in here? I cannot drop that. Let's see. Can I share my screen? Okay, I'm going to share my screen. Screen, window. There we go. Can you see that?
Yep, that's it.
So that sort of like that symbol.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But without the snake. So I don't know what that... I know that the snake and the I don't know what you would call that, a stick. It's not really a stick. Mm-hmm. It's some sort of esoteric symbol. I've heard someone talk about it before.
Yeah, it's tied in with
like a magical symbol. Yeah.
Yeah, magic. And it's also tied in with the Kundalini and yoga, like you're trying to open up your serpent chakra or whatever.
Okay. I did not know that. So that's that. And then let's see if I can play this. I probably won't be able to do audio because last time I tried to play audio, it did not work. Oh, here we go. Let me try to share this. Share screen. Window. This guy right here. Share. Okay. Can you see me there?
Yeah. Nice. Okay.
Yeah. You can't hear me, I don't think.
How long ago was that?
A long time ago.
Yeah. That's crazy looking. Creepy.
Yeah. So yeah, that was very weird. When was that? Let's see. I will figure out when it was, but it was a long time ago. Like at least 3 years ago. It'd have to be.
Trying to find. Say. Book of Jasher is the one I was trying to refer to earlier.
Yeah, and that's also one of those books that's been referenced numerous times in the Bible by
other people.
Crazy. So
the Book of Jasher and also the Book of Enoch has been referenced, and I mean just a bunch of other references. But this Nimrod, I mean he's always depicted wearing this. I mean most people wore that kind of outfit, but his, I wonder if that's like supposed to be like the skins on the depiction.
So. There's got to be, I mean, if they were garments of power, like imagine how it probably had more power than just making the animals tame. I'm sure it gave like supernatural strength or something too.
Yeah.
It'd have to have, crazy.
Yeah. The whole story is insane just to think about. Just the, you know, portals in itself is. It's crazy to think about, you know.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it seems kind of like what we're doing right now with, like, the CERN and all that. It seems like, right. You know, yeah. Like trying to open portals, trying to redo Babel, you know.
Yeah. Gain some sort of knowledge or power or some advantage in the world, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And there's, in Sweden, we're... CERN is. Isn't that supposed to be some sort of significant place?
Yes.
Isn't it? Is it mentioned in the Bible? I was trying to think. Someone said...
Are you talking about Apollyon?
Yeah.
Yeah, Apollyon's the name of the destroyer, but there's a place there named Apollyon. Like there's some sort of garden in tribute to him. That's the king of the bottomless pit, supposedly.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's very crazy. So is there anything else like with Nimrod that could, I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm probably going to edit this out. Well, I was trying to come up with something here and I lost my train of
speculation. So earlier you talked about, we were talking about Nimrod and portals and that the Tower of Babel would have been a portal, not just some sort of hype thing, ladder to heaven or something, but there was some sort of supernatural portal going on there. And you mentioned the Anunnaki. Maybe they had a part in that. And I think that there's probably more to that than what, you know, what we've made with connections with all that kind of thing. Because think about this. So if you look into the ancient alien kind of narrative and those stories, they talk about the Anunnaki maybe coming and enslaving some ancient humans, making them like mine for gold and other like precious elements and things like that. And so this is sort of the speculative connection that I made in my brain. So it's like, what if there were tribes of humans that were enslaved by giants, by Anunnaki that had come through and they were ruling these people? Because we know that the giants were cannibals. So it's like they would rule them, they would like eat them and enslave them, make them dig for gold and all that kind of stuff. Well, what if part of Nimrod becoming a mighty hunter was that he was starting to unite the tribes of humans by conquering, killing off some of these giant overlords, Anunnaki overlords or whatever they were, and quote unquote freeing some of the people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe he was kind of like a beloved, is almost like an ancient Trump figure or something.
Yeah. So I just had a thought, like a major thought. So, you know, the Nephilim, and they always refer as the second incursion was, what is the name of the mountain? Mount Hermon?
Mount Hermon. Yeah.
Hermon, yeah. Was the second incursion. Yeah. So what if this was all started, the Nephilim coming back before that with these Tower of Babel and these portals and the Anunnaki, that is the return of the Nephilim after the flood then, which would set up giants and stuff.
You mean like what if Nimrod had a part in opening that portal and allowing them to come back?
Yeah, allowing them to come back in. Because I mean, that's only a few generations after the flood.
I think there's probably something to that.
You know?
They had help. They had to, you know what I mean? And it wasn't righteous help.
No, not at all.
Yeah, that's a very good connection. I think there's the two that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because that's one of the things. I mean, so I'm trying to think. So the Tower of Babel, was it in historic Babylon where Babylon is today in Iraq, or was it Tower of Babel somewhere else?
It was in the Plain of Shinar, wherever that is.
I'm going somewhere. Plain of Shinar.
Shinar.
I totally spelled that wrong. Plain of Shinar. Okay. It'd help if I spell it correctly. It's in Mesopotamia. So let's look at a map here. So Mesopotamia. So that is, gosh, I wish I need a bigger map. I need a bigger boat.
I was just thinking that.
Where is Shinar? Shinar is there, but I really need a larger map, but I cannot find it. Why can I not just bring up maps and look at this? Why, computer? Why? More.
It's in Iraq, located around the estuary of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, now commonly known as
Iraq. So Tigris, Euphrates.
Yeah.
Which would be, you know, close to the Garden of Eden is, you know, because the Tigris and Euphrates, they flowed into the Garden of Eden. I can't remember.
From it.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Located around the estuaries of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, now commonly known as Iraq. Shinar is where Nimrod's kingdom began. Genesis 10. The Tower of Babel was built. Genesis 11. And Kings Amraphel, sometimes identified with Hammurabi, and Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel 1, all made their homes.
Hammurabi. So very interesting. You know, my son, he really loves history. Yeah, okay, I see that now. I need that map. My map is horrible. I'm looking at it. So he came home singing this song. It's like, obey Hammurabi's code. We Hammurabi's code. Like he was singing this song that they had played in school, like during history. And I was like, what is it? And that I mean, gosh, that's crazy. All that. He was telling me about Hammurabi was like one of the greatest leaders or back then. I can't remember what he was talking about.
I sent it to you, but I don't know if it's very high quality image, so I don't know if it's gonna come through very good.
It's all good. I was going somewhere with it, but I don't think that it's where I was thinking. I was thinking that maybe if it was, I mean, all the, you know, they're right there all together. Iraq, Iran, Israel, they're all, you know, kind of joined together. But yeah. I was thinking, you know, I was like, well, what if, you know, he opened these up and, you know, they went, the giants, you know, settled like in the, you know, the promised land from there. And I was like going, I was going to all these places, you know.
Well, really, I mean, that's what Gary Wayne talks a lot about that in his book, but he talks about how like the land of Canaan, I mean, it was settled by all of these giants, these different giant people groups, and the sort of the devil and the and all of his band of misfits did that on purpose to try and block the promises of God, because all the way back in the garden they knew the prophecies about Jesus. They knew that there was going to come one, a seed of the woman, to crush the head of the snake. Yeah. Right, so they kind of knew that. So I think that there was all this planning going on, and they were intentionally going out there to try and subjugate all the humans and to enslave them and try and destroy them, wipe them off the face of the earth, kind of thing, you know. So
yeah, man. So it was a really good episode tonight. I know we kind of just scratched the surface of this because there's so it's such a bigger topic
than yeah, I think that's a lot.
Than you know we even know, you yeah. know, because I mean it would take, you know, a long time to dig in to find all the little details about this.
Right.
But man, I want to do some more research on Gilgamesh and find out. I think that, like, you know, the theory I'm going with you know, it's just another tale of the same person. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the names are changed because, you know, the language changed.
I think you're
that,
right.
That could be something there. Yeah.
Yeah. Very telling. It's interesting. Yeah.
But man, thanks a lot for coming on.
Yeah, thanks a lot
for being the new co-host. Not coming on.
I'm hired.
So you're hired. You get half of everything I make. So you get nothing because I make nothing. I'll give you a raise. I'll give you 100% profits from this show.
There you go. Oh man, so, it's awesome. I mean, awesome. Getting
so you may owe me money because.
Yeah, probably. No, man, I love it. I'm here for all of these discussions. And like, I think tonight I wasn't like super prepared, so it was a little rocky. So I apologize about that, but.
It's fine. That's literally, I am never prepared. I always
we gotta get the first few rough ones out of the way. Then we'll really get to some solid.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely 100%. But guys, thanks so much for checking us out. I'm Jason. This is Chris. You can check us out wherever you do social media. Go on there, like, follow, subscribe. Hey, we're on YouTube now. So guess what? Like, hit the
like
bell icon.
Subscribe.
All this stuff down here.
And comments too of some topics or things that you guys want us to explore.
I want comments. I want you guys to come on the show and talk about your maybe you're a werewolf. I'm just saying, you know, it could be. You could be a werewolf. Maybe when the moon turns full, maybe you like you grow a little tuft of hair on the back of your neck and you go out and you chase chickens. I want to know about it. You know, come on the show, tell us about that.
Seriously, bro. I mean, werewolves have a lot of hair. I want to know what they're doing for hair care products. You know, is it like
special
conditioner or like, you know, beard oil, but for a dog, man?
Yeah. Man, there's some weird stuff with werewolves and Tennessee. I mean, it's
seriously. Actually, I had that thought earlier when we were talking about Norris and the ancient Egyptian remains. Have you heard any of those stories about some of the dogmen sightings up there having like a jackal head?
Oh, like, yeah. So
pointy ears. Yeah.
So that's another
thing. That's right in line with some of those images of jackal people from ancient Egypt.
Yeah. So Anubis is like the guardian of the dead.
Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, and a lot of dogman sightings around graveyards and such.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it makes sense.
Dude, I'm pretty sure I saw a dogman on Chapman Highway.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. It was right
like
around.
Night?
It was like 2 or 3 days before Halloween last year. And I was at my buddy's house up in West Knoxville. And we had just been hanging out by the fire. And I left his house at about 1 a.m., little after 1 a.m. So it was probably about 1:30, 1:40-ish a.m. I was heading home, you know, because I live down south. So I was going down Chapman Highway and went past this huge cemetery. And I mean, it was pitch black. There was no moon that night. There was nothing. Pitch black.
I know the cemetery you're talking about.
Yep. And coming around exactly the corner, there's a ditch. Something come up out of the ditch and matched speed with my car. And I was in our family vehicle, the Sequoia. I mean, it sits up high, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, going down, curving around, something came up out of the ditch and was like running kind of in the ditch next to the road, matching, and it went and then ran in front of me. Was the blackest, biggest wolf-looking dog I've ever seen. Just huge and hairy, and it had that gait of like a wolf in sprint. Had a big bushy tail, just black as night. Like it was so black that I was like, you know, and we had been, I hadn't been drinking or anything like that. Like we had had a serious like Bible discussion for a couple hours, you know? And so it was wild and it was so black. It was almost as if the light didn't fully illuminate it. It was almost like so black that it kind of swallowed up some of the light around it. And it like, this almost inhumanly fast, I would say, ran across the path of my headlights across Chapman Highway and then down, and right across from there, like is where the cemetery is, and then there's some like a bunch of really densely wooded hills, and it went up like in there and disappeared.
Dang. That's crazy.
It was crazy. Like I was shaking. I was like, what did I just see? It's almost like your brain doesn't like register.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I called my buddy Spinning. I was like, Jordan, you're not going to believe this. He's like, don't stop. Go straight home. Don't get out. Try to look for it.
Dude, that's crazy, man. Yeah, I mean.
I told Tony about it one time at church, and he's like, let me stop you right there. Were you anywhere near any sort of graveyard? I was like, yes, a very large one. He's like, yep, there you go.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, that's the thing. So I think I know what our next episode's going to be. We're jumping in dogman werewolf territory. Seriously,
let's go.
It's one of my favorite subjects.
Let's go.
So,
I've seen all right,
guys. We will. I mean, gosh, and there's movies we can reference too. So,
yeah.
Did you know? Gosh, I was scarred as a kid. That's why I like werewolves so much. Freaking, my parents were watching Silver Bullet.
Bro, I was just gonna say Silver Bullet.
I was a kid, and gosh, man, it terrified me.
That movie is
all that
crazy.
Thing has. Gosh,
yeah,
to this day, it still freaks me out.
Yeah, that movie's nuts, dude.
Yeah,
we'll talk more about that. So you guys definitely tune in because I will share some of the things I've learned delving into werewolf lore and that kind of stuff.
And I actually had a dogman sighting also, so I will share that.
Can't wait.
I didn't want to ruin it for the next episode, but I want to because we're at the end here, so it'd be good to tell the story again at the beginning so everyone can hear it. So guys, thanks a lot if you stuck around to the end. Congrats, because this episode was kind of everywhere.
a little bit,
but we'll see you next time, and thanks for checking out AFK Discussions, and we are out. Peace.